Welcome back to Bench Tested, a Ghostbusters podcast. I'm your host, Charlie Harsh. And if you are hearing this, that means that we've officially made it to season two. First off, thank you. When I started this show, the goal was simple. I wanted to create a space for builders, makers, engineers, artists, and fans where you could all come together and talk about the things that make this hobby so much fun. Not just the finished props sitting on a shelf, but the work that goes into them. The successes, the failures, the late nights, the problem solving, and the creativity that brings these pieces to life. Over the course of season one, we've had the opportunity to sit down with some incredible guests, builders, designers, prop makers, engineers, and creators who all have helped shape this community in their own way. And now we're kicking off season two with someone who has done exactly that. Today's guest is Sep from Dirt Farmer Industries. And if you've spent any amount of time in the Ghostbusters prop building world, especially around HasLab Proton Packs and Hasbro Proton Packs, chances are you've heard of Hasbrackets. What started as a solution to a problem has become one of the most widely adopted upgrades in the hobby, helping builders mount and carry their packs the way they always should have been, like the movie. And with nearly 600 sets sold, it's safe to say that what began as a project for one builder has become a staple for the community. But this conversation isn't just about brackets. It's about identifying problems, creating solutions, learning new skills, supporting fellow builders, and turning an idea into something that hundreds of people now rely on in their own builds. So we're going to talk about Ghostbusters fandom, engineering, design, product development, the evolution of Dirt Farmer Industries, and what it takes to create something that genuinely improves the hobby for everyone around you. Season two starts right now. Sep, welcome to Bench Tested.
Appreciate you having us.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you being on. It's been something that I've really wanted to do, and that is have you on and talk about what you've got going on. But before we get to all that, I want to start at the beginning. Before Dirt Farmer Industries, before the Hasbrackets, which we'll get into, what was your introduction to Ghostbusters and what made you fall in love with this franchise?
Man, I was probably 3 years old. I'm a child of the 80s. So my parents, I think, took me to probably, I think it was probably Ghostbusters 2 in 1989. And I was hooked. And then we all got the cartoon show and, you know, the real Ghostbusters. I watched probably every episode of that until it stopped being kind of good. sometime in like the I think it was the early 90s, you know, the episodes, Dave Coulier, no disrespect. But those just the quality wasn't really there.
No.
And I think at that point, you know, I started growing up and Power Rangers came around and, you know, you just kind of move on. So,
yep. Yep.
But I mean, truly, you never really move on from Ghostbusters. So
yeah, no, and that's 100% true. And I'm right there with you. You know, it's what was it? Lorenzo Music, I think, played Venkman before Dave Coulier came on. And it's you're right. I mean, it wasn't the same. And you know, you could just tell. I mean, even for us as kids, you know, you know when something's off. You know, and then I think
something's a little bit different. Yeah.
Yeah. And then once they added, you know, Slimer and the real Ghostbusters, you know, then it kind of became a little, I don't know.
It's a little canned. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just didn't have the same vibe. I've been a Ghostbusters fan since pretty much as long as I can remember. My dad was in the military. We were in Fort Walton Beach when I was really little. And I've got like this picture of me, beach blonde hair, sand in the background, and I'm still wearing a flight suit with a Ghostbusters patch. And I think I've got a Black & Decker drill in my hand that was a substitute for a proton pack. So
yeah, you could do some real damage with that thing.
Yeah.
Were you kind of
NiCad battery?
Yeah. Yeah, that thing's heavy. Yeah, that's a hammer. So were you the kind of fan who like immediately wanted to build things, or did the maker side come later?
No, I think I've been a maker pretty much since forever, really. Even in an early age, my mom would get on to me and hassle me about cleaning up my room because I would save, you know, cardboard boxes and all sorts of just junk. And I don't know, there's a fine line between maker and hoarder.
Yep.
I think you just end up, it's like, well, I'm going to need that at some point. So that's always been there. My first proton pack, I think it was actually my junior year in high school, and it was a total piece of shit. It was thrown together with every piece of garbage and scrap thing that I could find that slightly resembled, you know, the proton pack. I kind of half-assed followed Norm. You know, is it Norm Gagnon? The plans, the Norm pack from back in the day.
Yeah.
And you know, this thing's cobbled together. I don't have it anymore. It was really like the neighborhood that we lived in was actually kind of a under construction neighborhood, or you know, one of those development type cul-de-sacs or whatever.
Right.
And so I mean, there was always there were always construction done, so I could just kind of sneak in and find different parts, like the little the little mirror clips that kind of look like a resistor if you squint and you spray paint them black or you know gray. I hoarded those things. It was like those were gold. So I've been a builder pretty much my whole life. My career never really matched it until only until the past couple of years, but it's been a wild ride. And Ghostbusters has been awesome for Dirt Farmer Industries. And I mean, that's where we get the name, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. So now let me ask you this. What was the very first Ghostbuster prop costume project that you ever attempted to build? Would you say that it was that proton pack, or would you say it's something, you know, more tangible, something bigger, like with the electronics and all that?
Yeah. So I think in earnest, my first build project was probably the 75% Spirit Halloween pack.
Okay.
So I saw that those were popping up, and I picked one up and ended up getting the Taco Belly cyclotron and bumper mod, and that made it actually look like a real proton pack.
Nice.
Just a little scaled down. But yeah, then I shortly after that, I got into 3D printing during the pandemic, and I just got hooked. And then I put together a Q pack. I think it was Mark II or Mark III. I can't remember. That's really kind of when I kind of entered back into fandom. I think was probably around that 2020 time mark, I would say.
Right.
Like I said, it doesn't really ever go away. But I'd say it laid in dormancy for quite a while.
Now, looking back at that first build, what lessons did it teach you? And was there any influence of that still kind of pushes you into what you designed today?
That's a good question. I got to think back to that build. I think a lot of it was just patience. I mean, you're always going to be waiting on somebody's parts. You're always going to be waiting on something. You're always going to be waiting for paint to dry, little things like that. And you don't want to rush that, because if you do, then you end up having to scrape it all back down and paint it all over again.
Yep.
I think just generally the more that I get into the makerspace and the more that I kind of learn about craft and, I don't know if you know this, but I'm actually in school right now for gunsmithing. Which is kind of a big divergence from Ghostbusters cosplay stuff. I mean, there's some really cool crossovers. That is entirely patience. You've got to be extremely diligent, and you've got to take your time, because if you rush through something that is like somebody's grandfather's, old hunting rifle, and you mess it up, you can't really replace it.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think patience really is it's not just a virtue, it's a necessity. So
that's definitely true. And I can imagine that there are a lot of crossovers, at least a lot of tools and skills that you may learn or come across along the way that you can apply to what you're doing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I've learned so much about working with metal, working with wood, things that may at some point show up into more of what we do at Dirt Farmer Industries. But, it's a really vulnerable place to be sort of a 3D printer and 3D printing workspace for the one business, but then to also have like a gunsmithing business with everything that's going on in politics right now. Not that I would want to get too far into that, but it's kind of a vulnerable space. And I've always want to make sure that the Dirt Farmer Industries fans know that I'm not abandoning that, and I'm not necessarily trying to push anybody into the other more regulated work that I will only do once it's regulated. But yeah, it's there are some really cool crossovers because it's like I see something that, you know, I'll see a picture of a proton pack or like a, in particular, like the Neutrona one when that video with Adam Savage and the other guys, you know, they're looking at it and it's like that shade of black isn't exactly black. I'm pretty sure that's actually like a slightly blued variation. And I'm kind of like, wait, blued. Oh, wait, I could do something with the bluing tanks. That would be pretty dope.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so there are some like, my mind always goes like 1,000 miles an hour. As you can probably tell during this conversation, I'm not exactly.
No, it's all good. No, I want to bring that up because you mentioned that, and I caught it too when talking about the latest episode with Cinema Relics, I believe is what it is, and Adam Savage was on there, and they cracked open a original. It was a Spangler pack that they kind of screen matched it to, and I noticed on the back the motherboard had that blue tint to it.
Yeah.
And I've seen some people who have caught that before. I just kind of took it as, oh, maybe they're tripping or something like that because I had never seen it. But yeah, I saw it then. And, you know, with the studio lights and everything, I think that definitely kind of, you know, no pun intended, but shine some light on the whole thing. And yeah, it did. It kind of showed it off. What would you say that you would like to maybe work on or maybe see others in the space kind of work on when it comes to something like that? Are you happy with the matte black or the satin black that they use, or would you like to see more of that bluing?
I think, well, so bluing in particular doesn't necessarily work with aluminum, but you know, Cerakote is a fantastic option. And it's something that, you know, I mean, that's a higher tier, so it's not like that's going to be something that we could really offer mainstay, you know, for everybody. But you know, for the right buyer, the right builder, that kind of thing definitely has value. Because like you said, you saw the same pictures that I did, and I was kind of like, oh, that's Cerakote. I know that Cerakote color exactly. And it doesn't have to be Cerakote. It wasn't Cerakote on that, but you know, I think something with that kind of durability and something with that kind of longer lasting finish might be, you know, the perfect thing that somebody's looking for. So I think, you know, kind of offering those custom builds is always something that we're looking to do. And it's kind of hard to market necessarily, but you know, I mean, we're a small production studio in rural North Carolina. So until things change, you know, we're kind of just grateful for what we get. So
yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. And I think that there is, you know, there's a lot that can go into that and a lot of specialty stuff too. You know, again, the right person comes along and it makes sense. Yeah, you know, why not jump on that? And of course, you know, it maybe expand the offerings as you move on. What point did you realize that you weren't just building for yourself anymore, that other people were interested in what you were doing and your solutions to the problem?
Well, I think in particular, maybe like that with the has brackets, you know, for me, I got the HasLab and saw the brackets that came with it. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking about what would I do if this showed up without any kind of brackets? And so, you know, initially, I do have the brackets, so let me try to replicate that. And I thought about that, and we did. I mean, I bought a I bought a 12-ton press, and I was, you know, kind of ready to go ahead and go down that rabbit hole of maybe I'll just, you know, them all, get a press break and just sit in here and stamp them. But yeah, I realized pretty quickly that that was going to be way too cost prohibitive for most people. I mean, I can't sit in and bend those brackets as cost effectively as, you know, somebody else with a much bigger setup.
Yeah.
So then I kind of, you know, looked at, all right, well, what if I'm going to 3D print them? You know, let's pick the best quality materials that we can. Let's make sure that orientation is a factor in the 3D printing. Let's make sure that, you know, as far as the design itself goes, let's do something slightly different than just kind of tacking the frame to the motherboard. You know, like what can we actually do that truly supports, not totally independently, but, you know, it gives it a lot more support on the frame side. So then it kind of frees up the motherboard to do its job, you know, so the other, it really works as a whole system. So yeah, I mean, I think that was kind of, I mean, that's not the first time that I built anything. So I guess I didn't really answer your question.
No.
But looping back, I mean, we started out kind of with the idea of let's find something that's unique. And I think that's really where I start with any project is how can I do something differently? What can I bring to this space that's unique? We make it a point to not really sell anybody else's 3D prints. Even if I were to get a license for them, that's not really me. There's a lot of integrity that I put into my work, and for me, that's really important. I make it a point to only sell what I make. So that's just really important to me. I guess that kind of answers your question in a roundabout way, maybe. I don't.
Yeah, no, and that's all good. I think, the big part of it all is that you're doing something that is needed, right? And people come out, the HasLab, for example, was massive. And I think those came with the hardware.
Yeah, it did.
The Hasbro pack, the Pulse pack, on the other hand, did not. Now it came with the mounting holes, but it did not have the right things. And just for those folks out there who may just be getting into this, maybe looking at a HasLab or maybe a HasLab pack on secondhand market or a Hasbro pack that they can still pick up. What we're talking about are the brackets that hold on the frame, the Alice pack frame. And these brackets are they're would you say that they're out there? I mean, I guess people could manufacture their own with the right parts from Lowe's, but that's just a pain in the ass in and of itself. So when you go out and you look for a solution, there's not many out there. And that's where you came in and you were like, okay, let's go ahead and do this and not just do it, but let's make it better. And I looked at the prints of what you did and just how they're installed, and man, you nailed it. No pun intended, man. You did it.
Thanks.
You killed it, knocked it out of the park. And I think that when people are out there looking for a solution, I personally, I see if I had a pack, one of those, I would definitely go to you to get them. And I think that that's cool that you did. You came up with that great solution and you made it work. And I was gonna ask you, did you, when you were transitioning and doing all this, you talk about the 3D printing. At what point in that process did you say, okay, I'm finding these designs that are free, maybe on STL Finder, Maker World, what have you. Now I wanted to start designing my own. When did you decide to take that and jump into CAD and start learning, say, Fusion or whatever CAD you use? When did you start doing that, and how long did that take you?
So I think it was pretty early on that I don't exactly remember what the specific thing was, but I think it was probably some. I mean, for me, 3D printing is I see what some of the guys do, guys and gals that are into 3D printing. They do these really beautiful, works of art, and I think that's amazing. I'm not that artistically inclined in that regard. My thing is really just give me a problem and I'll come up with a solution. I think the very first thing that really made me jump into CAD was actually a pole saw. It's a cheap pole saw from Harbor Freight. The trigger, it's like a chainsaw that's on a stick, basically. But anyway, the trigger went out on it, and I was like, I don't want to have to buy another $70 pole saw. So I ended up taking the thing apart and kind of looked at the trigger. I was like, I could make that. That can't be that difficult. So it was kind of the first thing that I really jumped into CAD, and really with that level of specificity, not necessarily just Tinkercad where I can move and drag objects and do that kind of thing. And yeah, sure, you can put some parameters on things, but to basically get the down the fillets and the chamfers and make sure that this is actually something that will 3D print cleanly. That was kind of the first thing, actually, I think that I really got into. So I mean, yeah, I use Onshape. It's been a great program. There's a lot of great tutorials on YouTube. I think that's kind of how I got into it. I just really, if there's something that I want to learn, I generally go to YouTube first. That seems to be kind of where I go to learn things, but
And I want to backtrack here real quick too. And talking
Sure.
about the has brackets that you did or are
Yeah.
doing, I want to clear that up with what I said, I do not believe that I have seen others out there who have made theirs. I'm sure there are some. What I'm talking about are yours, and yours are the only ones that I've really paid attention to, and I think that they're great for what they do, and I think that you have, like I said, you nailed it. Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, please.
No, I was just going to say, when people are looking for that solution, and you're out there, and you may come across someone else's, and maybe it's out there, do you really analyze that, and you're like, okay, maybe I could do this differently or do that differently, or do you kind of step back and you're like, okay, I'll let them have that and play with that, but I'm going to try to do my own thing and maybe do it better?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. So yeah, I don't know of anybody else that's really in the space that's making brackets, but I think, you know, I mean, there's other guys that are selling, you know, metal brackets, and I'm not sure how they're making them, and I'm not one to diss on other makers. I don't,
right.
That doesn't necessarily, you know,
yeah.
There's nothing wrong with what they're doing. I think however they're making them, good for them. You know, I think it's a big enough market that it supports anybody and everybody, you know, being able to come up with a product. And, you know, it's a marketplace of ideas and it's a marketplace of products. So, you know, kudos to them for what they're doing. But as far as like the Hasbrackets, I mean, this has really been truly a very community driven initiative or project from the beginning. I mean, really, like, it relies on user feedback. There's because I'm only me, and I'm just a guy that's in a workshop in North Carolina. So I don't have the same points. I don't have the same experiences as everybody else. And the amazing thing has been how many people are, you know, coming forward with, hey, this didn't really work out exactly for me. And, or, you know, this is a little awkward during, you know, the install, or it's slightly uncomfortable here or there. And, you know, I mean, that's all feedback that I'm definitely listening to and trying to figure out, you know, how do we make it better? So that's the beautiful thing about the 3D printing is that I can iterate it.
Yeah. And I was going to say that part is amazing that I've seen you do. And one thing that stands out, as much as the engineering that went through them, you know, when I was researching Dirt Farmer Industries and what you've done, is your emphasis that you put on customer service, fitment guides, helping people avoid mistakes. That stuff is important. And
yeah,
that is where you're stepping up and, you know, showing that, hey, there are people out there who need a solution. Not only do you need a solution, I've got that solution, hopefully. And if it's not working for you, let's figure out how we can make it work for you. Why is that part of the process so important to you?
Well, I think it's a process that we're all learning, right? We're all learning all the time.
Yep.
So to me, it's really important that we take the lessons from the community, and not just, you know, us at Farmer Industries, but everybody that's building something. You find a new piece of information, and if you can incorporate that into the work that you're doing, you know, then it makes it better for everybody. So to me, it's don't know. I think it's also an education thing. In a weird roundabout way, not that I'm, you know, getting on a high horse of education or anything, but, you know, I mean, I think it's, if we can give somebody the information that they need, even if it's leads them to a competitor, I'm fine with that. I think it's absolutely fine that, you know, I mean, like I said, it's a marketplace that is open, and if something works better for somebody somewhere else, that's totally fine. But, you know, let us know why it didn't work out for you, or, you know, in the case of we're still learning, I'm still learning so much. You know, I mean, this past week, you know, we get feedback for all the frames, but in particular, like the LC2 frames, they're a bitch to work with.
Yeah.
There's no easy way to say that. You know, most of them have been, so that a little bit of a history, if I have time, I don't know. So the Alice frames, the initial evolution, so there was the LC1 frame, which is what you see on the Ghostbusters 1 build, you know, the 1984.
Right.
And so it's pretty straight as far as the profile of it goes. The profile in the LC2, which was used more in Ghostbusters 2, so it's not entirely screen inaccurate, but it's kind of purpose is a little bit limited to that movie. Anyway, those were in service for a lot longer. You know, basically late 70s all the way up into the 2000s. Those frames were beat to hell by the time most of us get them at, you know, an Army Navy surplus store or something like that. Right. So, or, you know, they've been like, you know, a soldier will feel like something's uncomfortable, so they'll just bend it themselves. And, you know, that's just that's the condition that we get them in.
Right.
So you're going to have all sorts of issues with fitting. And to try and make a bracket that is a one size fits all for that, good luck. You know, we do our best and we're trying to kind of increase the tolerances that we've got so that it actually fits a wider range. But it's a challenge. It's still an ongoing challenge. And I, you know, that is one of those things where definitely, absolutely, 100%, we rely on customer feedback. So.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that, too, because I've never really paid attention to the differences between the two frames. But now that you pointed out, I do see that. I think the frame that I've got on mine, I'm looking at it now, it's got to be an LC2 frame. Because it's got when you say that the profile of it is a little bit more straight versus the LC2, are you referring to the top of the LC2 that kind of curves forward a little bit?
A little bit, but it's mostly in sort of if you're looking at it, it's like a cross, right? If you have it standing up straight in front of you.
Yep.
So there's the vertical bar and then there's the cross bar. And so on the LC2, that cross bar actually bows out a little bit away from the rest of the frame, where the LC1 is pretty much straight across. So it's like a flat, which is perfect for mounting to a proton pack.
Yeah.
The LC2, not so much. It's a little bit harder because you've got that kind of that bowed out, swept back area. So I mean that's one of the differences that you can look at. I mean there's other smaller details, like a lot of the LC2 frames. I think most of them are, you know, when you buy them at the Army Navy store or wherever you get it from, you know, they're going to be that olive green color. Where the LC1s were almost all black. I'm actually working on putting together a more in-depth guide when I've got a little bit more time. Right now, all of our time is pretty much sunk into let's get these kits out. It was just kind of like a massive surge of fan acceptance, and it's been amazing. But we're very busy here. So as you can tell, you've been asking me about doing this show for, you know, months now. So
I know. And I'm so glad that you were able to find some time to come on and talk about this stuff. And you know, just that kind of those visions that we have always thought in our heads are what is correct from these different pieces that we see from the pictures and reference photos and stuff. And then finally getting the right information about what was what, and that, you know, for me, that's new knowledge. That's stuff that I would have never picked up on. In Ghostbusters 2, did they paint those frames black if they came in that olive green, or did they leave
them
green?
They must have. I'm not entirely sure on that detail. That's a great detail that I'm sure somebody else has that information. I don't have that knowledge, but I would love to know. I'm sure that they must have probably painted them black. I'm sure that some of them also probably came in black. I don't know. I don't necessarily know the production line history of LC2. So that's something that, you know, you gave me a challenge and now I've got to add that to the, you know, to the guide when I do it. So.
Yeah, I just I was wondering about that because the one that I got, it was the olive green, so I'm assuming that it probably was the LC2. And you know, I primed it and painted it black. But I kept the green, the pads, the straps.
Because
I think that was in the movie. They didn't use the black ones.
Now
one thing that I've noticed, and people may be like, well, why won't you just use a recreation if you know, instead of that, why don't you just use like a Fox or a Rothko or something? One thing I have found about those, and there's no shade in getting those, they work great, but they're just not as durable as these LC2, these old school frames, is what I have found out in the process. Because I have a pack that I have that's just for wall display that I'm not really going to troop around with. It's my GB2 pack. I had printed all the extra parts from the Q pack. I figured, you know, what the hell, I'll go ahead and put it together. So I did, primed it, painted it, sanded it, all that stuff. And of course I did more on that than I did my main pack, and that kind of pisses me off, but I digress. I wanted to put a frame on it, so I put one of those on it. And that's one thing I noticed is that they just feel a little bit more flimsy than the old school frames do.
Yeah.
Is that one thing that you've noticed actually, with these brackets that they're able to fix?
Well, I was going to actually say, I'm really glad you brought that up. I think that actually kind of points to one of the design philosophies of the HAS brackets is that, I mean, I don't know, you know, if you're trying to do like a super screen accurate build, I would not want to drill through some of those cheaper frames. Because to your point, I mean, they're relatively thin aluminum. In some cases, like the Rothko, I wouldn't want to drill into one of those. And, you know, I mean, supposedly they've changed. I talked to AJ at Ghostbuster Fans. Great guy.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Probably one of the most knowledgeable people in this entire fandom. But anyway, you know, he said that apparently they have made some changes to the metals used, and it they should be okay to drill into. I still probably wouldn't risk it just based on what I've seen and what I've got my hands on experience. You know, and so where I was going to say is that you've pointed to sort of the one of the design philosophies that I kind of carry with me as far as prop modding goes. You know, I don't want to have to make people invest in the same level of power tools and, you know, drills and things like that to make these things work. So for me, a big part of whatever comes out of the shop, not everything, but the large majority, I try to make it as user friendly as possible. So, you know, somebody that is just kind of fresh into this industry, fresh into this hobby, you know, they can just pick it up and use it. Yeah. So that's kind of part of it. The other point I wanted to bring up is that, you know, you're right. There are a few reproduction frames that I would really trust. You know, in the process of putting together sort of the user guides and information for the community in general, I've bought just about every reproduction that there is. The few that I would actually trust are the MT. I think it's MT. I don't remember what that stands for, but Mike Tango, so MT is one. And then the one that's actually offered by CNC.xyz on eBay is a fantastic frame. Just as solid as the vintage LC1 frame that I've got. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, with those, they're all a little bit different. The thing that we've learned in the course of the HAS Brackets product run is that each frame has slightly different ribbing and on that central bar. And that does make a difference as far as the fit of these go. We do have information of that on our website. But yeah, I mean, there's just all sorts of these little differences because, I mean, they're made in all sorts of different factories and they're not always made up to the same specs. And but yeah, like definitely the Rothko and the Fox Outdoor, they're fine to use. They're absolutely fine to use, especially if you're using a non-destructive modification. No problem. You know, putting that in a set of HAS brackets, totally fine to rock those. And those are probably one of our best sellers. So
nice. Yeah. And that's something too I wanted to get into is, you know, talking about kind of how, you know, you go through this process and, you know, you come up with all this stuff. You know, a lot of builders guard their secrets. You've done the opposite by providing documentation, as you discussed, hardware recommendations, even digital files at times. Why do you think sharing knowledge is important in this hobby?
I guess maybe it's just from a, well, that's interesting perspective. I don't know. I just think it makes all of us a little bit better. It makes all of us a little bit better at building. There's plenty of things that I've learned from other people. You know, Mark Carabelli, Taco Belly himself, you know, he and I chat relatively frequently about all sorts of different, you know, things that we're doing and things that we've learned. Or, you know, Dan Harshman is another fantastic example of somebody that I've leaned on. You know, what is he doing? What's going on, you know, with his builds and things like that. So, you know, you're constantly learning things in the process of building a proton pack or a trap or whatever. And I think it's just, I think that's just part of the community ethos is, you know, you're not brought into this hobby alone, and you're not going to leave this hobby alone. So I don't feel like it all needs to be closely guarded trade secrets. There's some things that we don't necessarily, you know, tell everybody, but I think by and large, transparency is the way to operate. You know, I that's just sort of my business ethos as well. operate with transparency. I think I'd rather tell somebody when I can't do something and have them a little bit upset, but maybe come back to me because they appreciate the honesty, than to tell them something that isn't the case. And, you know, turns out that it fires, in my, you know, backfires in my face. So,
right.
You know, as far as the files go, yeah, we did sell them for a little while. And I know it was a big disappointment for a few people when we decided to pull those. But it was ultimately just kind of a decision that if I was going to put my name on it, Dirt Farmer Industries, and that was actually going to be a product that I used or that we sold, you know, I wanted to be able to stand behind it. And that's that goes back to the integrity. You know what I mean? That's everything. That's what I have. It's really important to me that the product that people get from our shop is something I can truly stand behind.
Yeah.
And that, you know, when you introduce all these other variables that go into 3D printing, I mean, even just the relative humidity of the filament when you're printing, I mean, that can have a huge impact on how well your brackets hold up.
Yep.
So it needs to be, you know, the right material. It does. It absolutely is. And, you know, I mean, it's an accessible form of manufacturing. But I mean, that last part, that manufacturing part, it starts to matter when you start talking about, you know, quality. What's the quality of your product? And that in order for me to be able to stand behind it, I need to basically have a little more control in the process. Now that might be something that we revisit it at a later point. I'm not really sure. Yeah, we've got a lot of cool, interesting other ideas, and I'm always happy to, you know, work with other 3D printers and at least give them some tips and tricks. And, you know, I'm open to, yeah. And yeah, I think to me, like you said, it's not necessarily like we're the only ones doing this. We didn't invent, you know, this stuff. We're just trying to work with people.
So. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Now, what are some of the most creative, unexpected, downright wild pack builds that you've seen people create with your products? Or have you
seen anything? I've seen a couple that are really cool. You know, it's just sort of like paint schemes and color combos that people kind of put together. I think a lot of people don't necessarily stray off of the well-worn path when it comes. And I think that's kind of, I mean, it makes sense. A lot of guys want to stick with the, you know, more screen accurate builds. And that totally makes sense. That's where I'm coming from. My builds are, they sort of strive for that screen accuracy. It's kind of hard sometimes because it's like, well, that's a really cool idea. And then I don't ever do anything with it. But, you know, I love seeing some of the wild, you know, like I think one of the ones that I saw at Dragon Con a couple of years ago was it was a Barbie pack. I can't remember who it was, but if you're listening, you'll know that was your pack.
I remember seeing it. Somebody posted that on, I think it was GB Fans or maybe Ghostbusters Fans Worldwide on one of the Facebook groups. But I remember seeing that, and I thought it was awesome. It was very unique.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that and then, like, the, what was it, the Ecto-Glow series.
Yes.
Did you see that?
Yeah, that was incredible.
That was also at Dragon Con. That was super cool. I can't say that I've seen anybody use our products in that kind of build yet, but I would be amazed to see that. So, I've seen slight variations here and there, kind of color tweaks, but nothing too wild yet. So we'll see what happens.
Now, beyond Hasbrackets, where do you see the Ghostbusters prop building community heading over the next few years? Are there trends or technologies that you're excited for?
I'm not really sure, man. I think it's hard to say. I think right now the big question on everybody's mind is, when are we getting more wands?
Yeah, that's the big question for sure.
Yeah, so for anybody who doesn't necessarily know, Hasbro, you know, released all the 84 packs, but they didn't necessarily release enough wands to go with it. And if you're listening, you might be one of the people that is trying to desperately source one. I don't know if I have an answer to that yet. Happy to, you know, consider it, but I'm not an electronics guy. It's not necessarily my strong suit, but I would imagine that things will probably shift and evolve over time. I tend to be more of an old school Ghostbusters guy, but there's a whole group of people that are, you know, into Spirits Unleashed. I never played it.
I play it every day.
I'm sure it's awesome. It looks awesome. I'm not much on video games. I don't know, I'm getting too old.
You can never be too old for video games, Seb. Come
You're
on
probably right. Yeah,
now.
you're right. You're right. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure I think that would be fantastic because there's so much gear and so much like custom cool stuff in that game. And I'm sure with the new Netflix series, there's going to be some awesome stuff in that as well. So I think it'll be really cool to see, you know, what this with this newer generation of Ghostbuster fans, what they put together. You know, we had Ecto or the sorry, the Extreme Ghostbusters back in the day, but you never really saw too many builds with that. We saw some real Ghostbuster builds, and people still do those. It's pretty cool. But I think, I don't know, there's just something about that 1984, 1989 silhouette that is just absolutely unmistakable.
Yeah.
And I think that's hard to get away from for a lot of people.
Yeah. No, you're right. It is. It's just you can't run from the classic, right? I mean, you got to
Yeah.
stick around with it and just look at it and just admire it and see what you can come up with it. I think it's fun.
That's just an iconic film history. I
Yeah.
mean, there's ever since I was about 3 years old, I mean, there was like that was like the coolest thing I'd ever seen on a screen. So it was kind of like I need one of these, and it's an itch that has been scratched a few times, but it's still not really completely scratched. So
No, but I don't even put the Band-Aid on anymore. I enjoy scratching it.
yeah, it's just too much
to be
fun.
honest, I know, right? Now, looking ahead, what's next for Dirt Farmer Industries? Is there a problem in the Ghostbusters world that you're, no pun intended, but itching to solve? Or is there a project that you're dying to build? What's next?
I think a lot of the next projects that we're going to be working on with the Hasbrackets line, I would like to try and keep it a modular system so that it's something that, you know, if you decide, well, I bought a Rothko frame and it's fine, but now I got a different frame and you want to be able to switch something out. There's that option. There's also the option of like maybe it make additional accessories. So things that just make your life a little bit easier while wearing a pack. I don't want to give too much away right now. But, you know, I mean, kind of those quality of life enhancements, they're not necessarily going to be screen accurate details, but they're things that maybe it's useful while you're standing around in a convention line waiting for, you know, a hot dog or whatever. I don't know.
Right.
Or, you know, you feel like there's a better place to store something because let's be honest, wearing a flight suit, I mean, despite the fact that it has as many pockets as it does, none of them are practical.
Yeah, it's true.
So, you know, just little things like that, I think, is kind of what I'd like to do with the line. After that, I'm not really sure. I think, you know, time will tell. You know, being in school right now, you know, for a particular trade, that may influence it. But really, I think ultimately, at the end of the day, Dirt Farmer Industries is kind of my intention is for it to be sort of a problem solver.
Yeah.
What kind of and I can't I don't generate enough problems on my own. I need other people to come to with their problems to me. So for me, that's a really important, you know, part of our evolution is what can I do that helps people?
Right.
So yeah,
Yeah, and
I don't know.
that's a big thing. I think having somebody out there in the hobby who can help with those solutions is important. So my just word of wisdom to you, please don't leave it. We need more folks like you out here in the hobby solving these problems. I think it's important. And you know, that brings me to my next point too, real quick, is that I have a buddy, a couple of buddies of mine, who I play Spirits Unleashed with nightly. We met
Awesome.
online, and we just have been great friends. We're all big Ghostbusters nuts. I think that's what you're gonna find if you do play that game, is that we're all nerds and we all love the hobby and the films and just the cartoons and the animation, everything in it. We love it. And they bought the packs, and a couple of them are looking to mod. One is looking to mod a spirit pack, their first pack to ever mod.
Nice.
And then the other is looking to mod their new Hasbro pack. So what advice would you give them on where to start first?
Maybe start small.
Yeah.
I think there's a tendency to overdo things and to overbuy immediately. And that I have that itch. every time I get into a new hobby. So, you know, for example, the shop press, you know, I came up with an idea. Let me go buy, you know, a couple $100 shop press that now I don't hardly ever use. but, you know, I think you buy more gear than you need. So take it out, use it, see what you don't like, see what you do like, and make the changes based on that. Don't necessarily follow everybody else just because that's the trend. Find out what works for you, find out what doesn't work for you, and then base your mods on that. You know, the Hasbro pack is pretty much, you pull it out of the box and it's ready to go just about. I mean, you might want to add a frame later, and if you do, you know, hopefully check out Hasbrackets, you know, were definitely an option among options. But, you know, I don't necessarily recommend that people invest. You just invested in a Proton pack. Have fun with it. Play with it. Use it. See what you like, what you don't like. I think that's just sort of my initial go-to. But everybody's different. If you want to turn that thing hot pink and make it into a Barbie pack, have fun. You know, I think that's the biggest thing. Just have fun. Whatever you're doing, have fun doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So. That's the important thing, is just have fun. I think when I first got my spirit pack, that was the first thing I ever modded. My first go-to was, I needed to put on a real clipper. I had to put on a real clipper.
Yeah.
Something about the extra weight and just knowing that you got that piece of hardware on there that will never be practically used is important to me. I just thought it was a great addition, and just seeing that metal shine and knowing it was there, I thought was fun. So
yeah, no, I mean, I think the Greeblies are definitely an area that, you know, you can always improve on. You know, my 3D printed pack has all of the, you know, metal Greeblies and original components just about. That's always a fun, easy one, I think. Well, easy in the sense of they're not that hard to change out. Hard right. in the sense of they're really hard to find sometimes.
But again, that's where folks like you come in, you know, and they offer those solutions. And so again, that's why it's super important to have more people like you out there. Where can people find Dirt Farmer Industries online?
DirtFarmerIndustries.com is our home on our website. I am most active on Facebook. I am working on getting better about posting to Instagram, and we do have a YouTube channel. There's not a lot of content there. I'm working on that. I'm sure you know, just as well as any other content maker, I don't necessarily always have the time for it. You know, it's hard to squeeze it all in. But we're there. And then we're also on Etsy. If you prefer, you know, going through Etsy's trusted and valuable network. But that's where you can find us mostly. But yeah, reach out anytime. I like to think I'm a pretty easy guy to talk to.
Yeah, no, it's been great. And also, we'll post a link to you over on benchtestedpod.com so people can find you over there and link you on over, and you can check out the Hasbrackets, grab those if you got a pack on the way or just have received one, you know. And again, this is a great addition to any pack that you may have with a frame that you just need to get it mounted. Dirt Farming.
Yeah, I think that might actually be something that we look into a little bit more. Sorry. Right now everything is pretty much just solely for the Hasbro pack. But, you know, I think down the road we'll look at, I do want to kind of look at different mounting options for, you know, maybe more screen app builds. So that might be something that we look into a little bit more.
And also, I wanted to ask you, Seb, do you have a group or are you part of a franchise, anything like that out there? Another Ghostbusters group in the Carolinas?
Yeah. So I'm, even though I'm in North Carolina, I'm actually a member. We're right on the border of Virginia. So I'm a bit of a black sheep group, but I am a member of Ghostbusters Virginia. So I want to give a huge shout out to them. I think they just this year got the bronze award for Ghostbusters Give Back. So awesome job, team. Love y'all. So yeah,
that's incredible. The bronze award. I was watching that live when they were handing those out with Jason Reitman and Gil Kenan at Ghostbusters Day up in New York. That's incredible, man. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I appreciate it. And again, shout out to the Virginia Ghostbusters. And we'll talk soon.
All right.
And that was Seb from Dirt Farmer Industries. I think one of the biggest takeaways from this conversation is that Some of the most impactful things in this hobby don't start as products. They start as solutions. A problem gets identified. A builder decides there's got to be a better way. A prototype gets made, then another. And before long, something that was originally built for one person ends up helping hundreds of others. That's exactly what happened with Hasbrack. But what really stood out to me wasn't the number of sets sold. It wasn't the engineering. It wasn't even the success of Dirt Farmer Industries. It was the mindset behind it. The willingness to keep improving something, to listen to feedback, to revise designs, to help other builders avoid mistakes and make their own projects better. That's the kind of thing that moves this hobby forward. Because Ghostbuster prop building has never been about simply recreating what's on screen. It's about taking inspiration from what's on screen and making it work in the real world. Sometimes that means solving problems the original prop makers never had to solve. Sometimes it means creating something entirely new. And that's where innovation happens. Whether you're building the first Spirit Pack upgrade, modifying a HasLab pack, designing your own electronics, or sketching ideas on a napkin that may someday become your next big project, the lesson is the same. Don't wait for perfect. Build the thing, test it, improve it, then do it again. I want to thank Sepp for coming on the show and sharing his story, his experiences, and the journey behind Dirt Farmer Industries. And I want to thank all of you for joining us as we kick off season two of Bench Tested. We've got a lot of incredible guests, builders, designers, and creators lined up this season, and we're just getting started. So until next time, keep building, keep learning, and keep testing. We'll see you on the next episode of Bench Tested, a Ghostbusters podcast.